Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, Cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout. This week, I'm joined by...
Hey, folks, I'm Bruce, also known as BJ, he, him, his. I'm a black tech professional, video game enthusiast, entrepreneur, virtual reality evangelist, and a bit obsessive about comic book and sci-fi media. Also, love animation, both foreign and domestic. Had this unique opportunity to travel the world for work and also for pleasure, and I'm thrilled to be able to share my passions with you, the Minority Corner audience.
Yes, that's right. Bruce is back, and I'm grateful to have him because what a week to be here, because it has been a week. Oh, wow. So we dive into the four deaths that have led up to the mass protests that have happened around the world in response to the killing of unarmed black people. It has hit a fever pitch. People are taken to the streets in the middle of the coronavirus because people have hit their point. Finally, waking up. And we talk about how, you know, this didn't just all happen in a vacuum. There are so many, all the different contributing factors that have led to this point in this moment. We talk about hashtag Blackout Tuesday. And once we figured out what it was and how it worked and its effects, all this public outcry actually be the moment, the catalyst for change, or will this just be another news cycle and trend of the moment? We talk about the other pandemic this country has been facing for centuries and the what we call the background radiation that black people have always felt that has always been there. The heaviness, the struggle that black people just learned and coped to live with. I'm proud to be a millennial and I'm gonna tell you why. Give me that soapbox. It's Pride Month, yay! But of course, with this current administration, we can't enjoy anything. First Karen, Ivanka Trump, well, I'll tell you why she is not invited to the Kiki, even though she thinks she is, and why I'm wishing her a very unhappy Pride. And unfortunately, but necessarily so, we've got to talk about that guy in the White House. His dangerous a photo op that came at the expense of peaceful protesters and how he's just inching his way. Listen, he's already there, full authoritarian form, and we talk about how he is just more dangerous than we ever could have imagined. And the holes and failures of our government that he's showing that were always there and what we must do to patch those holes up. And Bruce takes us to the main corner as he walks us through the history and origins of police in America. This was an eye-opening conversation. And like most American things, it's rooted in racism. Yes. The roots are rotten. I feel like that should be our flag. Our flag should just be a rotted root because that's America. Well, here we are, all this and so much more. Welcome to Minority Corner. Get ready to learn, laugh, play, and we're going to get activated as we dismantle these systems of systemic racism. Here we go. You know, if you would have told me back in 2016, that Trump would get elected and there'd be a pandemic and that there'd be, you know, the company erupting in a cold civil war and, you know, civil unrest and just racism coming to the brink and, you know, murder hornets and plague monkeys and there'd be an impeachment trial and he would try to, like, collude with Ukraine to try to get dirt on his opponents. If you would have told me that all that was going to happen, uh-huh. I would have said, oh, yeah, I believe you.
yeah, pretty much.
And don't forget the locusts. There's also locusts happening in South Africa. Yeah, these are the end times. Buckle down. And I'm not even, there's so much to discuss. I don't even have time to talk to you about the plague monkeys that attacked a university student, a doctor in India, and we're eating viruses full of... This sounds like I'm doing like Alex Jones, like conspiracy yes. theory stuff. Shit is fucking real. We're waiting to find out what happened to the monkeys who ate the coronavirus vials of blood. Anyways,
yeah,
a lot of shit's happening. I got you spooked. Gather around, children. I'm going to tell you some spooky stories.
Here we go.
But this is what's going on. And it's just been... this has been a fucking nightmare of a presidency. Like, it's just like... Yeah. And I don't even think that we've allowed it to really sort of sink in of, like, this... And it's okay if you're just like, wow, fucking... Things are fucking shitty right now.
Agreed. I mean, there's so much that's happening at once. I mean, there's so many things that you're like, oh, when did that happen? How many years ago was that?
Impeachment,
you
know? The impeachment was like, what, 2 months ago? Maybe 3 months ago? Maybe four? I don't know what's time, but like, it wasn't that long ago.
No, now it's ancient history because...
We've moved on.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone was saying that, you know, it's kind of like too, you know, it's sort of like currently right now, we have... All going on at once, the 1918 pandemic, the Great Depression, and the Civil Rights Movement happening all at the same time.
Yeah. We have, like, world-changing events happening in close proximity, which I think contributes to the sense of a lot of time passing. Because normally, I mean, you can have decades when maybe one of these events happen, mm-hmm. and it gets talked about 4 or 5 years after that event. And, like, oh my God, remember when that... disaster happened, and yeah. It's like, I mean, I've barely remember the Australian fires.
The what? I can't have time. I've already moved on.
Exactly, right? It's yeah, like, oh, what?
Lizzo was there to help out.
Yeah, it's like, wow. Like, it's just...
It's a lot. Mind-bending. And I think, too, it's... the world is watching. I'm getting, you know, we're going to talk about this later about, you know, allies responding to specifically black people that they know. But mm-hmm. It's interesting because I, you know, when I traveled around to Europe, I was like the Paul Revere of like, racism is real in America. Racism is real in America because everyone were spoon-fed these lies and told it to the rest of the world and anyone who could listen that mm-hmm. like we had done away with that. Martin Luther King came, waved a wand, and everyone was good.
Mm-hmm.
And, literally seeing in the matter of just months everything that this country has postured about just crumbling before everyone's eyes, you know, and they're seeing just the true country. The emperor has no clothes. Like, this country is just actually really fucking naked.
Well, that's been the tragedy of all of this is that, or I don't know if maybe it ends up being what saves us, but the sequence of tragedies that has happened has pretty much revealed the faults and weaknesses in all of our social structures that we have in this country, from healthcare to political, criminal justice. I mean, there's so many things that are like, ah, yeah, this is how this system is breaking down under stress now that we're in the middle of a pandemic and experiencing these issues and having this civil unrest. You know, it's really disheartening to see, but hopefully, you know, the hope is that we learn and come out the other side and actually have real change after the mess.
Yeah. Right? And I think, too, there was something different about this one. Because, like, you had back-to-back unarmed black people being murdered and killed in various different sort of degrees. And they happen all the time, but there are four distinct ones that happen succinctly. Mm-hmm. You know, there was one that not a lot of people are talking about because, again, they happen so fast. There's also Tony McDade, who is a black trans male, who is a black trans man killed in police custody. Breonna Taylor, who is just sitting, an EMT worker, mm-hmm. you know, essential worker. Killed in her own home, shot and killed by the police in her own home. Mm-hmm. Again, where's the NRA to be talking about her and protecting her rights?
Yeah.
But again, the emperor has no clothes. We see the NRA for what it really is. It's just literally it's an organization masked around in a hood, essentially, because protecting the rights of white gun ownership.
Well, they revealed that with Philando Castile. Yeah. You know, the Second Amendment nut should have been all over that.
Yeah.
And where were they?
Right? Yep, with Philando Castile. And then Ahmaud Arbery, who we, you know, saw, witnessed, you know, running for his life. You can't be black and go for a jog. And then George Floyd. And mm-hmm. so you had all those four things that happened. And then again, black people were being disproportionately affected by the coronavirus than any other, group and community. So just dying by the wayside there. And just a government that just isn't functioning or working and doesn't really seem to be caring. And I think it shows what people are willing to risk to go out. There's middle of coronavirus, and that people are willing to risk to go out and to protest amidst this virus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's telling. And I mean, but it's also been the history of America. It's been this unfortunate forcing function for change, that things have to get messy and things have to be pushed to a certain level, like the moons and stars have to align in the most negative of ways, where the, the ugliness and the nastiness is out and in our faces. And then at that point, because we realize what the ugliness is and want to stop, then, the onus, the motivation for change comes. And yeah, it's really unfortunate that we operate that way, or that the history of the country has been these stops and starts based on and around very tragic events. But it's almost kind of our playbook as America, as this young country now, that it almost has to be, a combination of, unfathomable factors to come together before the country's like, enough is enough, we are fed up. You can only be disconnected from your general population for so long, government, before, something has to give.
Yeah. I just thought, when Eric Garner and with Michael Brown and Ferguson, I honestly had thought that was going to be that was the first moment that I really sunk into me that I was a second-class citizen in this country, even though I was spoon-fed and a different thing. Even though I subconsciously knew that I wasn't, I subconsciously knew all these things that I was feeling, that I was experiencing, racism, microaggressions, having to work twice as hard to get half as much, and just, the constant stress and anxiety of what it is to be, non-white, straight man in this country, but specifically to be a Black person in this country. I could feel that, and then to visually see what was happening to Black bodies. And what was so disheartening, I think, about the last time when this happened 6 years ago, and there was, the people taking to the streets and these mass numbers that we're seeing once again, I feel like so much also time, though, was wasted 6 years ago to a certain degree, time and energy and effort, because back then we were having to debate the merits of Black Lives Matter. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have not had to have a single, so kudos to everybody for just jumping on board this go around, not have a single debate or conversation about that, and it's very taxing because I can't even get to the work. Right. And it's a lot of those questionings, I feel, it was coming from people who were seemingly white, liberal, progressive, and in some ways it makes you question that you're making it up. It's not as bad as you really claim it to be, or that's not the approach that you need to make. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that, last night I was scrolling through my Instagram. It was the tail end of Blackout Tuesday, which there was a lot of confusion on,
what you're supposed to do.
What you're supposed to do. And I have to say, too, I think what we've also learned is, the power of algorithms and hashtags and how they work and how to use them. I think everybody got a crash course and web development a little bit, how do algorithms work? And it was don't use the hashtag Black Lives Matter for your black square, because you're taking away from people who are following that hashtag and need to keep up to date about protest information or just information that, is specifically pertaining to the movement. And if you just go to that hashtag, you just see, it looks like black silence.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just a bunch of black squares covering up and preventing you from getting to the update that you desperately need.
Hands down. Yeah. So then you started seeing videos coming out that were like, oh, actually, this is what you're supposed to be doing. Use hashtag Blackout Tuesday. By the end of the evening, everyone had finally figured it out. And I have to say, my social media feed was just such a beautiful thing, because everything was just about blackness. There was no look at my cupcakes, or even I got a lot of thirst trap, you know, muscly men that I'd be following. Yeah. None of that. There was none of that. There was, no, Jabbar in a Speedo yesterday. That wasn't happening. And I'm not mad at that. He's using his social media powers for good. But, like, everybody was doing, you know, and so I was seeing, you know, facts about just, about oppression, about, you know, fighting anti-blackness and, you know, where you can donate. And so if it wasn't something that was about the movement, then it was a black square. And it was just honestly like a beautiful thing to see. And I've been feeling really supported, you know, and it's just been, there's something that feels different about this. I'm cautiously optimistic because I'm just like, all right, let's see where y'all, you know, take this. Like, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, it's an analogous to, you know, Sandy Hook and what we saw.
We thought that was going to be the moment.
That was going to be the moment, right? Like, there's no justification for this. Like, there has to be something that moves. And, you know, there was just still so little movement on that issue when it came to, approaching the issue of gun control. And it's a similar thing where you get your hopes up, but almost not too high because you're like, well,
I've been here before.
You know, we've been here before. We've been pushed to the brink on a particular issue. And this time, you know, it feels better. The momentum feels better. You have protests from all 50 states.
Yeah.
You know,
and around the globe.
And like around the globe.
All over the place.
Yeah. It's so encouraging. And it's like, okay, you know, maybe we're going to get somewhere.
I want to say it was like in Syria. I believe that there was a protest in Syria. And they've had a very tough couple of years. Yes. They painted a mural of George Floyd on like a wall that had been a building that had been completely like, you know, blown up or whatnot. But just like, it's interesting because I don't know what I think about how often does this country, you know, care? Like, that's how much people are watching and how much an effect that this experiment that is America, everybody has such a stake in it, which is, you know, by design, by the American design. But everybody is watching. It's a moment of a moral check-in. You know, someone was saying, you know, this election that's coming up is not a referendum on that guy in the White House. It's a referendum on us. Like, what is this country? Who are we going to allow it to turn into? And when I say we, I mean this country, but I really mean like white people. Y'all need to get it to fucking together. Like, this should have been handled. Like, I didn't kidnap a bunch of people. My ancestors weren't well. Some of my ancestors, but then you know there was rape and all that sort of stuff. But you get what I'm saying? Is that like there this should have been handled and done, and we need to make sure that this doesn't. It's like someone was saying there's two pandemics that are happening. There is the pandemic of there's the COVID-19 pandemic, and there's the pandemic of racism that has just been plaguing this planet for centuries. You know, it's been this epidemic since the first slave ship that landed on this continent, 1619. And it's gotta be painful. It's gotta be uncomfortable to get rid of it and get through it. But just like with any disease that you need to rid yourself with, or any surgery, surgeries are painful. Chemotherapy is painful, but you go through it, you know, to get on the other side. Birth, I don't know from experience, but I've seen some videos and there's a lot of yelling and like, ooh, ladies, y'all be strong. Like, I don't know, ooh, you are doing the work. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, but absolutely. Oh my goodness, thank you, Mama.
Mama,
you know I love you.
Mama, I love you. That's the Spice Girls. Don't forget where this podcast came from.
Already been forgotten.
Don't you forget. I will be here to remind you. So anyways, Spice Girls was saying what? Yeah, don't be putting Mel B out like that. But, I will say that Mel B was the first time I realized that England had black people. And history note, she was not the first black person in England. They'd been there because you know how I know? England had slavery. And what do they also bring back to their country? Them slaves.
Yes.
And also, I'm going to say something very unpopular, which I've said on this podcast before, and I'll say it again. Fight me.
Uh-oh.
I wish we lost the American Revolution.
Oh, damn.
Slavery would have ended sooner. I know this because they stopped doing slavery a hell of a lot sooner. So, there you go. We'd still have a queen. We might have, like, this, you know, guy in the White House. We would have still been like, well, at least we still got the queen.
You sure you're from America?
Mm-hmm. Fight me.
Watch out. I am drinking tea, so maybe I don't disagree.
See? Look at you. It's in you.
Oh, absolutely it is. But yeah, what I want to say is something that comes to mind that James Baldwin had said about, you know, the history and the wound and poison of racism and slavery, particularly in America, and how this is not just about justice for, you know, our black men that are out there so they can feel safe when interacting with the police that are meant to protect us. But it is also about the health and mental well-being of the rest of the country. Like, this is also about the souls of this nation, white people included.
Yeah.
And, you know, the American dream can't live if, you know, 1/9 of the population or more is considered less than human and not a part of it. Like, the whole notion of the American dream falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, at the core of what it means to be an American, really, you know, of this experiment of democracy, this freedom of expression and freedom of speech and freedom to attain a life for you and your family that is productive and positive. You know, that notion, that ideal, that noble goal can't live side by side with the condemnation of a fellow human that just looks a bit different from you.
It kind of reminds you, like, you pay the price for it in some way. In the same way that it's actually more, it costs us more to not have everybody have health insurance. Like, we actually end up paying more, right?
Yeah.
People end up having to wait to go to the emergency room. Like, it gets paid in some way, in some facet. And then you just have a corruption in the medical industry as well because of where their focus is in making money and not on necessarily the health of people. The same way, like, it costs us more to have homeless people. It's more expensive for us to have homeless people as opposed to figuring out ways and programs to make sure everyone has food and shelter and we can go from there. So, you know, I said this, you know, it's like, it would have been a hell of a lot cheaper for y'all to just give us 40 acres and a mule way back when.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're having to pay the price. And some of that might come into the price of, you know, oh, the target got damaged. Well, maybe the 40 acres of the mule should have came along, you know? Maybe that should have been happened.
Yeah, so now you've got people, you know, it's all part of, and going back to the point you made about Black Lives Matter and having to argue about the legitimacy of that statement 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an issue where there's people in this country that know about the historical events but fail to connect the dots throughout history to their effects today, how, you know, slavery and the unfortunate falling through of the 40 acres and the mule, the sharecropping Jim Crow laws, how throughout history...
Redlining.
I mean, there's
segregation.
Just... Absolutely. I mean, there's been government-mandated discrimination at the local, state, and federal level that has persisted throughout history, and now you have a wage gap between white and black families. You have all these black people living all in the same place, that what we call the ghetto, the inner city, whatever you want to call it.
Purposely designed.
But, I mean, that's by design. That's not an accident that you just happen to have all the people that look a certain way all living in the same part of the city, right? That's not something that was done by accident or by preference. Like, black people don't choose to live by refineries.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's...
Ooh, I like this property.
What is that? Sulfur?
Ooh.
Smells so good in the morning.
But then you then talk about, you know, why disproportionately black people have different health conditions, high amounts of asthma, just, like, high blood pressure, like, all these different things. Like, it's just a continuous poisoning. It's almost, you know, like a very slow genocide of a people, mm-hmm. you know? And it's mm-hmm. almost at every turn, again, we're the pandemic left behind. Like, it's just allowing a certain group of people to just slowly die out with the facade that, oh, no, you're fine. You have your, no, your little space. You're good to go.
Yeah, it's this year. You know, you can go out there and, you know, pick yourself up and work hard and achieve X, Y, and Z. And it's like, well, yes, that's a reality for some people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can't pick yourself up by your bootstraps.
You ain't got no boots.
Or straps.
Or straps. And now, and when I had the boot, you kicked me in my face, took my boot, burnt it, shat on it, and said, why can't you pick yourself up? I did it. I got these boots that my daddy gave me, laced them up for me, and there we go.
Taught me how to use the straps and everything. But, you know, after that, I'm a self-made man.
Yeah. And so it's just like, I kind of feel like in some ways there's been, it's sad. I feel like for the first time, like, white people that I know see me. Mm-hmm. And they see my struggle, my journey. And not like, you know, this isn't always raisin in the sun. Like, mm-hmm. I laugh a lot. I have a good time.
Yeah.
But any success that we have is not because the system is fair. It's in spite of that system, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was going to a town hall today. I was late by an hour because I forgot. And mm-hmm. I almost made a joke. I was like, oops, CP time. And I was like, you know what? No wonder why black people are always so late. We wake up with a certain level of stress and anxiety that we have been conditioned and learned to live with. We mm-hmm. wake up with it. I have mm-hmm. no idea what it's like to just be like, life,
yeah.
you know, but like we subconsciously, it's just there that we've learned. And it's been interesting because this, like you said, that wound, I feel like this wound has been open and that I've always had it and known that it was there. And not only is it opened, it's like, I feel like personified with all of the protests that are happening. That's what I've been feeling on the inside, or the reaction to what I've been feeling on the inside. And in some ways, it's kind of scary because, like, everyone can see this wound that I feel like I have had and that we all have had on some level, and some people more than others, but it's been there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've described it to my friends as like, background radiation that is as always there. It's always, like, a whisper in the darkness that's always chattering. And then the events like this happen, with Mr. Floyd's death and, you know, in those voices, that pressure, that radiation gets stronger, that pressure gets, stronger. And it really was revealing to me, you know, having the good fortune to do some international travel, to go to Japan, for instance, and to feel so light and just travel. And I'm like, man, I'm so juiced, and not just because I'm a huge nerd and love anime or whatever, and love, like, oh, this is cool being in Japan, but also there's this knowledge about what's the absolute worst thing that can happen to me here.
You're not gonna get shot.
You're not gonna get shot. Like,
yeah.
I'm not gonna have a traffic stop or some, you know, trivial altercation with an authority figure and be fearful for my life, right? While I'm in Amsterdam or while I'm in Japan. And it was really, I had to step back and think, like, whoa, like, man, that's such a, it's so odd because now this pressure is kind of missing, right? Of, man, that's not in the back of my head anymore now that I've, you know, been in this country for more than a week, because it's like, oh, wow. Like, you know, this is just an issue I don't have to deal with. Maybe there's some other racial issues I have to deal with in that country.
Well, if they
or
think that
perception
you're a black
issues.
American, then they'll like you. But if they think you're from Africa, then they won't.
Yeah.
And that's a whole, or if you're like Muslim or something, which
yeah.
is been my experience over in Europe. Like,
They're,
y'all ain't getting that much of a pass. But I do understand what you're saying. Like, it's when I've traveled over in Europe, I've realized how much I think about guns when I'm here in the US. Like, my constant fear that I'm going to get shot at some point. That's wild. No one should have that thought all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you condition yourself to sort of to live with that. And, you know, when I go over to Europe, sometimes, like, you have to drag me out of there, and my friends there don't understand it because they just, like, but America,
Yeah.
I think I'm grateful that they finally are seeing I'm not making this up. Like, I felt like I've been like, felt like this crazy person or like this person who's been like, I'm not like, I'm not making it up. It is true.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Trump's authoritarian photo op and first Karen Ivanka Trump is just trying to fuck up pride for the rest of us. Can't we have anything?
We are the host of My Brother and Me, and now, nearly 10 years into our podcast, the secret can be revealed. All the clues are in place, and the world's greatest treasure hunt can now begin.
Embedded in each episode of My Brother and Me is a micro clue that will lead you to 14 precious gemstones all around this big, beautiful blue world of ours.
So start combing through the episodes. Let's say starting at episode 101 on.
Yeah, the early episodes are pretty problematic, so there's no clues in those episodes.
No, not at all.
The better ones, the good ones, clues ahoy.
Listen to every episode repeatedly in sequence. Laugh if you must, but mainly get all the great clues. My Brother and Me, it's an advice show, kind of, but a treasure hunt, mainly. Anywhere you find podcasts or treasure maps, My Brother and Me, the hunt is on.
So, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. So that Orange Oompa Loompa, who in that house, I don't like saying his name because I feel like it gives him power. And I'm just at my breaking point.
Yeah.
So he, a few things. One, he decided to have this photo. It's very it's been very terrifying to just see, you know, one of our First Amendments is the right to protest, right? And it was okay for a certain group of people to protest a few weeks ago, Liberate Michigan, as they had their guns and were yelling in the faces of police who I don't recall, but I don't remember the police wearing riot gear and things like that, you know, when these countries needed to be liberated. Obviously, you have no idea what liberation, what being oppressed means if, like, the government trying to save you from dying from this deadly virus. But anyways.
Yeah.
So it was this well orchestrated thing where the man in the Oompa Loompa, dictator in chief, was supposed to make a speech at like 6:15, had the media waiting, waiting around, didn't give it until I think like 7:15. And then as he's giving the speech, these peaceful protesters are being, you know, shot at with rubber bullets, gassed. And then we come to find out, so that way this guy can walk across the street to go to this Episcopal church.
That he hardly attends.
Held up a Bible for a little photo op, held it upside down. And I think one of my favorite parts, on Rachel Maddow, she had the priest who's the head of, I guess, the Episcopal Church. I don't know how the Episcopal Church works. But anyways, he was the same priest. He's the head of something that's Episcopal-y. Tweet me, Episcopals. Let me know. Here to learn.
Educate.
So anyways, he's like the head of the Episcopals or something. And he also, you might remember him from, maybe you won't, but I do. He gave the sermon at Meghan Markle, our black African-American princess.
Yeah.
At her wedding.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome.
He gave, but he's like the head of the Episcopal, so he came out into what I just love, because it's also a black man who's also connected to this faith and religion, and just pretty much denounced, like, what, you know, that guy had done, that it was just, you know, had he opened up what the book was talking about, and love and compassion. He just didn't have any of that. And it was just this photo op. And it just was so scary to see a leader willing to do that to its own people. Like, when he talks to the governors and he's like, you look like jerks by not, you know, being this, you know, lock them up and throw them in jail. It's authoritarian in the way that he's navigating. And that is absolutely incredibly terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things to unpack there that are so horrifying. I mean, how so many authoritarian and fascist political movements have wrapped themselves in religion to advance their cause. You know, the evangelical Christian right, you know, and how much noise they make on so many issues. And yet, I mean, I can imagine Obama doing the same thing. And I mean, them calling him the Antichrist or the devil incarnate or who knows what kind of names they'd have prepared for him if he, you know, not only went and strolled to take a walk, to take a photo op in front of a church awkwardly holding a Bible like you've never held a book before. But also, I mean, the means in which he did that was to essentially order police conduct and military action, essentially military force upon a peaceful protest, to clear the way in order to allow that photo to happen. I mean, it is just disturbing on so many levels. Mm-hmm. And it is just another example on how, like, whether it's, you know, whatever principle or whatever religion or whatever concept is, you know, supposed to be this principled stand, quote unquote, when it's really about, you know, a race relation or, you know, a preservation of a certain economical class. I mean, that's really what it's about. Like,
it's white supremacy personified, mm-hmm. you know, like, it's just like, it's literally this white man taking what he literally is white supremacy personified. He literally is white male privilege in the fucking flesh. Mm. And, you know, it's just, but it's my worst fear fucking imagine, you know, literally just taking what he wants. He, you know, just strolled into the White House and he wants to walk across the street and he's going to use this force. And, you know, there was a picture, there was like a meme that like showed like Obama walking across the Birmingham, Alabama bridge on the anniversary, I think like the 50th anniversary of it. Mm-hmm. Some anniversary, it happened. And then a few years later, they were like, let's remember this. And they grabbed hands, they walked across. And it's just like the juxtaposition of like uniting people to walk across is what Obama did. And like Trump just divided, you know, people to be able to get what it is that he wanted. And, you know, to even that, like, it's like, you know, Martin Luther King said that the riot is the language of the oppressed.
The unheard.
The unheard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Riot is language of the unheard. And, you know, also it's Pride Month, like, to remind everybody that Stonewall was not a parade. It was a riot. Like, Pride didn't, like, oh, no, it's just a Pride parade, right? No, we worked our way to that, right? It started off as, like, a riot that went for days. Like, there is something about, like, you know, it's for whatever reason, unfortunately, that's the thing that turns heads is the violence of it. With Emmett Till, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had an open casket and it was put on Jet Magazine. And that was a wake up moment for so many people. The same thing with these, as horrific as it is to see these, you know, lynchings with badges, and sometimes they don't have badges or they used to have badges, as horrific as it is, it's that's the thing. Without that, I don't think that you would have people saying no more.
Yeah, I mean, it is unfortunate, but I mean that the ugliness has to be presented front and center, you know. Just like, I mean, this is not anything new. We'll be talking about this later with the history of the police and you know, black and disenfranchised people in this country. But this is not a new issue. This is something that most black males can tell you about some type of experience. This is something that we've, you know, talked to our, you know, friends as we've grown up for years and years, and met with a healthy dose of skepticism until the rise of smartphones, really.
Mm.
And I mean, this doesn't change until now. You know, Rodney King. Maybe you thought that was a one-off because it happened in the '90s and someone just happened to have a big bulky VHS camera to get that.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays it's like everyone has a camera in their pocket and the ability to immediately live stream that to the other people in the world can see it in real time.
Yeah.
And with that capability, has come the rise in the recording and report and publicization of these events that are happening, where you're seeing, you know, black men in particular, for either no reason or for crimes that, you know, are misdemeanors at best.
Yeah.
You know, in a lot of cases, like, escalate all the way to end up with that person dead.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, but again, it's like, you know, it goes back to, you know, that kind of concept of, like, you know, to really get movement, to really get change in this country, it's been our history that things have to get ugly and messy before we move forward.
And I think it's going to continue. Like, this is, and we are months away from the election, it's going to get ugly. And I'm not saying that to be the boogeyman, but just to prepare yourself that, like, and dig in deep. Dig in deep, take your breaths, and you keep fucking going.
Yeah, it's Trump's playbook. I mean, he already, you know,
he's living for this because he also, yeah, he needed something to fight. Because he couldn't fight the coronavirus. He doesn't have the patience or the scientific, he doesn't have a brain to be able to handle that. Mm-hmm. But you have humans that he's been waiting for this. Roll out the tanks. He wanted to have tanks rolling out on his inauguration day. It is his dream to have seen tanks rolling down the streets of D.C. The only reason why he's been able to unleash military force in D.C. is because D.C. doesn't have a governor. And by our constitutional law, that for the police to be able to, not the police, but for the military to go into a state has to have the permission of the governor, because we are the United States. We essentially are 50 countries, mm-hmm, that are united in this one republic. It's a great, beautiful thing. I love it, you know?
Mm.
And so he's, you know, flirted around with the idea of the Insurrection Act of 1807, which was used by Bush and Rodney King for him to be able to send the military there.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe with the Insurrection Act, you don't actually need the permission of the governor. And that's really terrifying. On that point, the former Defense Secretary General Mattis has come out and just said, and it's his former defense secretary,
mm-hmm,
General Mattis, right?
Yeah.
Has come out and been like, there's a better way. Like, he's like, bitch, please. Now is not the time for that. He's like, he talked about empathy and there being shared commitment and that there need bold action and a peace rooted in justice. Oh, no, that was Bush was saying. Bush was saying that. Sorry. I'm getting so confused because I'm like, am I in the bizarro upside down world? Because both Bush and General Mattis have come out and been like, fuck you, Trump. Like, so what Mattis was saying is that the use of active duty military forces in quelling countrywide unrest, he pretty much is like, that's just not the way to go. He's like, it hasn't come to this. It should be used as a last resort only in urgent or dire situations. And he's like, we are not in that right now. Like, it's not that people are protesting. Listen to them. This was a moment for Trump to rise to the occasion, because you see, like, Joe Biden giving a speech and it's moving and it's empathetic. And it's like, that's the leadership that we're missing. We watched Obama today give, you know, a speech, and it's just like, I miss that. Justin Trudeau, of Canada, Prime Minister of Canada, came out and said something really beautiful and moving. And here we have, it's such a missed opportunity. He wants to go down in history as, I would have thought someone as egotistical as him would have wanted to not go down in history as, like, whoops, we almost had a Hitler, but we turned that around.
Yeah, it's so unfortunate, but so focused on division when a person in that leadership position is really tasked with keeping a country together. But, I mean, you're absolutely right when it seems apparent that this is what he really wants or something that he really dreams about. In not only in who he states he admires, mm-hmm, as some of the dictators he's mentioned, but also, I mean, we got a sneak preview of this with the caravans from Honduras that was a while back when, I mean, it was just such a huge scare tactic, you know, making up essentially an enemy to fight. You know, they're rapists and they're coming, and these criminals and drug dealers, I mean, they're coming and it's an invasion and we're going to mobilize the military to the border. And it's almost, you know, it's almost like he's tied this concept of you need to have some sort of enemy present to rile up people to basically for re-election,
yeah,
right? Like, it's all about, and all these things kind of tie back to the re-election. Even his delayed coronavirus response was really about, you know, it was so much talk about the economy and getting people working again, and all the, because that is an issue that's really tied to his re-election. That has nothing to do with the well-being of the country and its citizens.
That percent makes me want to flip tables, because then I'm just like, fuck you, people out there in the streets protesting to go back to work so you could kill yourself and other people. You should be protesting that your government's fucking protecting you. You should be like, no, we need PPE and we should have universal base income. You're being a fucking pawn. They're so blinded by their racism and their white supremacy that they're being used as tools and as pawns that, like, they are not for you, the working class, like the working white class. Like, you're voting and you're protesting against your own self-interest is what I'm saying. You're not being a team sport. You're not being a team player for this country that you say that you love so much.
Yeah. I mean, if you're about the Second Amendment, I mean, this is what you think you'd be preparing for, right?
This is where you should be bringing out hate, because we don't have the guns. So, like, can y'all bring those? Can you bring those back out there?
The president just said he's going to stick the military on the states.
Yes.
And that's the type of thing you get the guns out for.
And I feel like, do we get the guns now? No, not now. Oh, we use it for health.
Because we don't want to put on a mask and you want to get a haircut? Is that...
Oh, that's why we
bring the
guns?
That's why we strap it up?
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just making sure I know. Okay.
Oh, so when the tank roll down the street and they're shooting the press in the eye, we're going to just keep the gun on the shelf? Okay.
Okay, God, just check it.
I just want to check.
Fucking, like, you know, this Australian... There's an Australian reporter got fucking, you know, punched in the face.
Yeah, like hitting the... Oh, man, that... He got pummeled in the stomach, hit in the face, and then run off. And
it's like, that's... Yeah. And so I, you know, there's some people, like, listen, there's a lot to be angry at. And we have, for myself, this is, I'll just speak for me, what I try to keep myself doing. Being mindful of where I'm directing my anger towards. Can't be mad at everybody. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, because I, you know, we're in the middle of this, like, cold civil war or whatnot. You've got to find where your allies are in different moments. And then it's being like, all right, I'm going to ignore that thing that I don't get along with you about, or I'm going to be able to forgive you or give grace. I think grace has been one of my themes for this pandemic, giving other people grace, because on top of all the civil unrest, remember, we're in the middle of a fucking pandemic. Like, it's a really big fucking deal. Yeah. Going to a recession is a big fucking deal. So giving people grace and yourself grace. And so when people like, you know, Bush or Mattis, you know, come around and speak up for Americans, you know, freedoms and directly talking about the atrociousness of what happened to George Floyd and that the systemic, mentioning systemic racism, that these things exist. So I like to give grace for people. Yeah, Bush was a war criminal. Oh my gosh, he was a very, like, before Trump, he was one of the most, you know, terrible, evilest presidents. But, you know, Trumped him, living up to his name. Got him. You're number one. You won. You did it, dude. You did it. Tiny hands. I'm not gonna go. I'm trying to Michelle Obama, but I just can't. Michelle, I can't. I want to go low.
You better get on that high road.
I want to go low, Michelle.
You better get on that high road, dear. You talking
Fine.
About the issues?
That man with stinted hands. Get your hands out of here. Anyways, I like to give grace, and some people are like, oh, but, you know, Bush, and he did this. I don't have time for that. Listen, he wants to come around, and if Bush can help some racist turn their mind around, then I'm all for it, because there is a bigger threat ahead.
Absolutely. I mean, we're talking about, you know, there's a lowest common denominator. A president and an expectation of the office of president and the respect for that office and the expectations of being a member of Congress and being a public servant, that even though there was definitely a lot to disagree with while, you know, during the Bush years.
Mm-hmm, there was
a lot there, and it was like, hey, I mean, there was definitely, there was a sense that, okay, this man does respect the office. He has a sense of family pride. He has a sense of, care about America.
Right. And made some attempts in his little small white man from Texas, or I don't know where they're from, but he was governor of Texas. I remember. Blacked it out. But made like an effort, it seemed like, to reach out to not just the base, but America as a whole. Like, you kind of had that, like, oh, I don't like you, but okay, you're kind of trying at least, you know?
Yeah, you know, and there's, you know, there's a certain respect. And that you just, it kind of almost goes without saying. And then so you jump right to, hey, what's going on with this issue with the war in Iraq, or what's going on with this issue with the Patriot Act? You know, we vehemently disagree with some of the courses of action that you're taking here, and this is not the right way. And, you know, and that's where the discussion is. But we've got to a point now where the lowest common denominator has been lowered.
Well, it's
so
basic. It feels like now we're just talking about basic human rights.
Yeah,
that we're past this. We're past this. You know, putting kids in cages. Like, wait, what are we doing?
Yeah, human decency.
When did we regress? Yes, like human decency. Like, where did that go? Where it's like we're arguing about, and it's like there's not even a debate. Like, at least then it seems like there was a ability to have like a debate on policies and ideas. And again, if, for those of us who are marginalized, like there is. You know, there's no, I hate the term identity politics, because I can't separate the two. It's cute that y'all can, you know, separate, you know, who your identity from your politics. I can't. Mm-hmm. My politics, my identity informs my politics. So I think that's just sometimes like a right wing buzzword that they try to use to make us like think, you know, feel bad about ourselves, you know, or like millennial. It's a term that has been used to make me feel bad about my generation. Hold up. Hold up. Let me talk about what it means to be a millennial. I grew up during Columbine, okay? 9/11, the recession.
Part one.
And then Trump, recession part two, electric boogaloo. And now this, like, you know, the Civil Rights Act and Civil Rights Movement part tres, you know? So that's what, you know, so don't get out of me. I am proud to be a fucking millennial because we are out here making these changes, rising to the occasion. And we have been through fucking trauma. And I gotta say, like, Generation X, what were you doing? Like, where was you?
Got that COVID job, Generation X? Is that what you doing? You got that COVID job?
You got a lot of shit for that.
Can I stay at your house, Generation X? Because you got some stuff.
We ain't got no houses. It's America, we in a house now, but, you know, it took a while.
Barely. It took a while.
So, anyways, that was my tirade about that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's...
You're like, fair.
Very fair.
Bringing you back in.
There we go. But yeah, I think it's definitely that type of issue where now the debate has, you know, has just shifted to, let's talk about basic human decency. Let's talk about...
It's like we're learning the ABCs. Like, okay, let's go back.
Let's go back to the branches of government and their functions.
Yeah, literally civics. We're literally having to go back. Okay, so this is actually how the government works. And
we do have a constitution,
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're not a king.
Oh, yeah, trials have witnesses, yes. I don't know how... I guess you guys want to make a trial without him?
Okay, not a thing. but Space Force, got it, okay, cute. But someone I don't have grace for, and then we'll get to the, because it is Pride, and someone I don't have grace for is Ivanka Trump. And I don't know why I keep maybe having slight hope for her. Mind you, she was walking, clip-clopping in her heels alongside her daddy, walking to that fucking photo op with her, like, clutch purse and a little face mask as people were being shot left and fucking right. Like, girl, bye. Like, you're not... I hope you re-registered to vote down in Florida, too, because you are no longer, as a former New York resident, I can speak for New York, you're not welcome. You don't even go here. Anyways, she had the nerve to kick off Pride. Oh, I could like throw a table right now. This is not for you.
No.
For Pride, she tweeted out, less hate, more love, rainbow hearts, hashtag Pride 2020. And it's a picture of like love in like rainbows in a black square.
How disconnected can you be?
Why are you? I mean, good I don't hate you. So I'm not going to be, because you know what? When you hate someone else, it's like drinking poison and hoping the other person will die. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Because Trump has created a revolution around fear and hate. He's galvanized and weaponized like hate and fear. And we have to weaponize and galvanize love. Because that is literally the thing that it's the thing that's just going to bind us together, understanding, okay, we don't always agree, but we can love each other and believe that everybody has the right to basic human dignity. And that could be the base level from which we operate in. And then we have our states. You don't like this kind of law? Great. You can go to that state and have that kind of law, right? But there's a base level of basic human dignity, mm-hmm. which Ivanka Trump doesn't understand. So you get in the box. You get in the corner, Ivanka Trump. Not this corner. Not in this corner. Not this minority corner.
Not minority corner.
No, you're not here, Ivanka. You better get another corner. You better go get yourself another corner, girl. Because you can't. You can't know. Until you learn your ways. And it sets me because she has her father's ear and lap. Gross. got jokes today. Come at me. Come at me. It just upsets me because it's just like every turn is just left. It's just left everyone high and dry. So stop tweeting. Don't tweet about pride. Don't tweet about pride. You're not welcomed here. You're... father has, ousted, transgender people from the military. Like, you're not welcome here, lady.
Absolutely. I mean, it is.
Unhappy pride to you.
I mean, that's just another one of those precedents that has been just blown away. It's like, man, how do you run a country and then have your daughter and your son-in-law, like, officially a part of the cabinet in that type of role? It's just so...
Could you imagine if Obama had, like, you know, his brother from Kenya who does not like him and runs his mouth too much, but was like, oh, yeah, we'll give my brother a job.
Yeah.
And he's like, ooh, I got all this security clearances. What do you do here? Hang out. Yeah. Make decisions.
Yeah, well, they say, well, I can't have security clearances, but we just overrode that, you know? And it's just like, wait, what? Like, it's just so... It's just, I mean, it just goes along with all these things. Like, I mean, I can say personally, I learned so much about America with this presidency.
That's true.
Because I assumed that there were so many things that weren't just an honor system when it came to the presidency. Mm-hmm. Like, I assumed, oh, you know, there must be some hard consequences for a president. For example, switching things around to make sure that instead of golfing at a government facility like, I don't know, Camp David, that they're going to go to the Mar-a-Lago. Facility that they own.
That they own.
Like,
and make everybody have to pay that facility.
Yes.
Like, he's just been making all this fucking, like, money from his businesses.
Yeah.
He's had conferences where he's like, look at this Trump water here, and don't forget to buy these Trump ties, and Ivanka's got a new line of pride purses. Fuck you, Ivanka! Fuck you! She triggers me so much.
I'm so sorry.
Don't even get me started on Melanie Trump either. Flipping tables! It's just because we went from Michelle Obama to her. I don't want to read your plagiarized book. She's going to come out with a book and it's going to be called Becoming Melania. And it's literally going to be a plagiarized book. I'm like, I've heard this before. And it's just read by you.
This is so... I had no idea Melania was a community organizer in Chicago.
I didn't know that.
That's amazing. Oh, wow.
She had a daughter named Sasha.
Amazing. Yeah, I've been like just blown away. Well, I just thought like, I mean, taking left right politics out of this, like I assume that, hey, there's definitely some hard-nosed patriots at the FBI, CIA, Justice Department that are like, hey, we're gonna look through this dude. Does he have ties to, you know, financial ties to the X, Y, and Z? Is he subject to any kind of foreign influence? You know, is he abusing the money, the government monies that are flowing in his execution of the office?
Well, the answer is yes, and it's called the Mueller Report, and there were people at the FBI that did it. Mm-hmm. And then Bill Barr came in and said, nothing to see here, folks,
mm-hmm.
which is why it's like a thing that it's so important to, you know, with voting, it's so important. Okay, you don't like Joe Biden. I don't care. Get over it. Go vote for him. Don't just go vote for him. Like, go fucking campaign for him. Go get five other people to go vote for him in a swing state. Because one or two people are going to be president, either Trump or Biden. And here's the thing. Biden's not a king. He's going to appoint... We need an attorney general that's going to, prosecute police who are fucking up and murdering black people. We need, you know, all these different people at these different positions. Who do you want for the EPA? Like, that's where you could be putting your time and energy and effort into the dream team that you want to see put forward. Because, like, Biden's like, sure, okay, yeah, then we'll do that. Like, that's literally these... Wonderfully, this guy from lives in Delaware has zero ego and is just like, what do y'all want?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an opportunity, you know, and you can kind of look at that big picture, and there's just so many small things that are happening on a day-to-day basis in the office of the president that are just so unfortunate, like a head of EPA that doesn't care about the environment, a head of the Department of Education that's never sniffed a public school and hates them. You know, there's all these department heads and all these small decisions that are happening on a day-to-day basis in government work that are making this country just a little... more worse and a little less prepared and like circling back.
Worse off for black people. Everything that you mentioned disproportionately affects the lives of black people.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking for ways to be an ally, like suck it up and get Joe Biden elected as president. It's one of the most wonderful things you could do. And not only him, but folks into the Senate, folks into the House, folks like it's, you know, after Trump got elected, it just felt like, oh, what can we do? And it felt so long before we literally have something. Like, not only Barack Obama talked about this in a speech, you know, you don't protest or vote. You do both. It's not one or the other. You do both. You protest, you take action, and you vote. You mm-hmm. protest, you organize, you get involved in these campaigns, and you vote. Like, those, that should be... your second job right now is focusing on elections and these grassroots movements.
Yeah, I mean, now is not the time for apathy, right? And no. It's like, hey, and I can understand those of you out there, if Biden wasn't your first choice or
he
second or even
he was literally my seventh choice.
Eighth choice.
That guy in the plaid tie, Tom Steyer, was ahead of Biden for me.
Yeah.
I think Hickenlooper might have been ahead of Biden for me. Like, not Tulsi Gabbard, because I think she's... you know, evil, but and that's SNL's fault, so we need to be careful, because they have like, oh yeah, I guess she is evil, isn't she?
She's a Disney villain. Poor Tulsi.
Oh yeah, well, she's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, get involved.
Yeah, absolutely, get involved, because I mean, it's just like the small things, like, you know, I learned at some point, like, Trump has some business buddy in Russia, and he relaxed the government regulations on asbestos to increase the sales of asbestos of this one Russian business owner that sells it. It's like this.
Oh.
It's like how, of course, that gets lost in the flow of...
because there's so many.
There's
things.
So many things that are going on, but it's like
hydroxychloroquine came because he was at Mar-a-Lago, and the guy who like has a huge, I don't know, stock in hydroxychloroquine was pitching it to Trump, and next thing you know. Oh, this came out because Gavin Newsom, governor of California. Woo-woo. Mm-hmm. Hey. Future president. Hope you don't have any sex scandals, but don't matter because we've had Trump as president. So anything goes, morals are gone. Don't matter. Bring out the sex tape. Good, I want to see it. get over here, Gavin Newsom, with your hair.
Your slick back
with your
hair.
Slick back hair, Gavin Newsom. Let me bet you. Anyways, I digress. See, Gavin be getting me. Anyways, what's I talking about? Oh, his patriotism? No. he let gay marriage go through. So he had gotten this strange phone call, and long story long, it turned out that, like, Trump had given him, I think it was Trump, had given him his number to sell him a bunch of hydroxychloroquine, because, and that's why he kept pitching it so much, because obviously there was financial ties.
Yeah.
Like, and, or even, like, the things that, like, you thought, like, were... having to disclose your tax returns. I think the idea is Trump has showed us where all the holes were in our government. Mm-hmm. And so we need to sweep as much blue, progressive, Democrat people in so we can now put legislation in. Because, like, literally, America, we all knew it, but literally it's been held together by, like, Band-Aids and bumper stickers, gum and hope. And we need to go, America needs major surgery where to put in, where he literally has shown all the different holes that we've had of like, there shouldn't be any what's it called when nepotism shouldn't be able to just have your family members having jobs, disclosing your tax returns, getting rid of all of your businesses should be in a blind trust. And that should go for everybody who's in the Senate, Congress, the like. It just has shown us all the holes that we have, that we've had, even the things that impeachment showed us, that, you know, where, you know, someone's subpoenaed, they need to, it should be the role of Congress, something else we were talking about, so you're going on a tangent, but like, it's surprising like that Congress is not fighting for its own power, it's just releasing its own power.
Yeah.
And the forefathers didn't, you know,
That's supposed to be the device that's built into our government to protect us from a populist idiot president, right? You know, there's always the possibility like, hey, there's some people that, or some person that, you know, bullshits well, says the right thing at the right time, makes people feel really good, gets them riled up. Hey, that person can become president. But, you know, that's why there's the checks and balances system that's supposed to be in place to keep that person in check. And it's been, I think, one of the most surprising things to see a Republican government, you know, the Republican senators, a group of people that have been so adamant about communicating values and principles honor and all these other things.
And holding, an America and the Constitution.
Yeah.
The Constitution.
And it's like, with the jowls, you know, flapping. And it's just so disappointing.
Put a mask on them jowls.
Oh, you better do that.
It's coronavirus. I don't want you going around. Mask jowls.
You are at risk, McConnell. it's unfortunate that, you know, you would think at the very least that in spite of maybe all the corruption that might be going on or the conflict of interest that's happening at those levels of government, that these are people from distinguished families or accomplished people at some level. They have some sense of self-pride and honor and a pride in their position in government and their stance. And, I mean, that's an incredible amount of power to be able to essentially, as a senator, tell the president,
push back again.
We're not going to do this. Even though we're the same party, we have power too in Congress, and there just hasn't been any of it. It's just been
no
everyone,
checks or balances. And that keeps them, the president, line on their toes when they're like, oh, I can't. Because he's like, I don't want to give him that. I was going to say he's like a raptor testing the fence, but raptors are smart. he's like a plastic bag that keeps hitting. That it's like the Katy Perry song. He's like a plastic bag that keeps hitting the part of the wire fence, and it's just going to keep blowing until it can blow over the next part of the fence. He's a plastic bag, an orange bag. All right, coming up next, we're going to jump into BJ's Corner, the history of police in America.
All right. Well, let's go.
BJ's Corner, BJ's Corner.
Ready for my corner right now.
Ooh. You ain't ready. Oh, I have a song for you.
Uh-oh. Let's see. What kind of song? We got a song now? This is a song break. What?
I feel like a white man. Bam, 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 bam.
Who feels like a white man. Ooh, ooh.
I saw a job posted I'm not qualified for, but I applied and I got it. I saw a cop. I said, fuck you. Then I walked away. He said, have a good day.
I went to a store and got my item, no receipt, no bag. I just walked out the door with it.
I feel freedom. I feel like everything's for me. I walk around, I'm the king.
Wait, that's, I think that's copyright now. Where we wander.
Oh, man. I feel like a white man. It's a song that, like, I've been trying to really command having the audacity of a mediocre white man these days. And that's my theme song. I'm just like, you know what? I think a white guy would just be doing this. So thanks, Manaya Wayne.
Okay.
Anyways, continue that. Now that I teed you up.
There we go. Are you ready? I hope you're ready. Excellent. It is time for a couple things that I want to talk about in my guest spot corner on Minority Corner here. One is I'm going to talk a little bit more about police. And I think, you know, I'm not an expert on the history of police or police in general.
Like you're a white guy.
I'm gonna get this confidence together. I'm just diving right in.
You an expert? Let me tell you what I think.
I'm an expert now.
Here's what I know.
I opened Wikipedia twice.
I wrote the page.
But you know, I think, you know, there's, you know, myself included, you know, we over the course of high school or college, I mean, there was no history class in which I really got a really defined story on what is the origin story of police in this country. Mm. And I think that speaks to the relationship between people of color and police when you dive into that history. And yeah. I think, you know, I think there's always assumed that, you know, hey, police were just came with the birth of the nation, or, you know, we romanticize in like the old Westerns, like the sheriff in town, right? Mm. That was a person that, well, someone has to keep some kind of order around here, right? And it's a very romanticized position. But unfortunately, if you actually look into the history and dig in, it is not that at all. The police forces, before there were police forces, they were essentially night watchmen as cities grew. And what that means is that it was just some person in the neighborhood that volunteered to kind of stay up all night and make sure things were cool. But, you know, you got a kind of a reputation. They kind of either fell asleep or got drunk. And so it was like, well, that's not working out. And in the north, as the cities grew and you had businesses and stuff that they were getting in and shipments and stuff that they wanted to protect, a white elite that were getting more money that were going into town and being like, ugh, these Irish and their loud drunkenness and going to their taverns. And what are all these black people with their loud jazz music? Mm-hmm. We need some order here. Yeah. And that is where, you know, police forces that started out as essentially hired security forces that were independent. And then that is what happened. And in the South, unfortunately, I mean, and this is
So it's sort of like, it seems like it's to protect capitalism.
Correct. And this is, you know, early 1800s we're talking here, right?
Also, too, to point out, it's something I just want to draw a parallel. If you haven't watched it, well, I know you haven't watched it. I wasn't singling you out, but you might be included in this. You mentioned it, The Watchmen. Oh, my God. This is actually totally sinking into I'm thinking about The Watchmen.
It's like, on my list.
Yeah. So, but it's interesting because, like, The Watchmen 2, the HBO series is set on... It starts off in Tulsa, the Tulsa massacre that happened where Black Wall Street, like these, you know, if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry. We've got a Minority Corner episode for you where we actually talk about the Tulsa massacre, which the 99th anniversary is this year. And here we are still doing this shit to, you know, black people. But anyways, it just is interesting because The Watchmen talks about both of those things. So
yes, fascinating. That's such a wild and interesting tie-in. But yes, so the
South.
Yes, going to the South. So in the South, again, it was economic driver from the economic elite that was driving this. But instead of the night watchman or the hired hand on security, it was the essentially the person that rounded up the slaves, the slave patrol person. So because, you know, slaves were equated to economic, you know, prosperity, equated to wealth. So there was a very vested interest in making sure that your slaves stayed where they are and did not wander and did not escape. So the police forces in the South grew out of that sentiment, out of not only are you protecting my plantation and my crops, but you're keeping my slaves in line.
Wow.
And so this is kind of the...
Oh, I want to throw one more in there, too.
Oh, yes, please.
We talked about this on the podcast before, too, so look it up. But the Texas Rangers, I don't know if you're going to talk about them, but
no.
The Texas Rangers were essentially when America got Texas, or, you know, did its fuckery that it does. So America has Texas, so now what used to be Mexico, now you're Texas. And so these, you know, Mexicans who are now Mexican Americans, and then early gentrification, white people were like, look at all this land. And they came over here and like, but there are all these, you know, Mexican Americans there who couldn't afford the property tax. So they formed the Texas Rangers, which essentially like pushed them out. And there's one town where they killed like 300 Mexican-American women and children who couldn't afford their property tax. So Walker, Texas Ranger, go fuck yourself. And Texas Rangers, change your name.
Yeah. I mean, I think so there's really this disconnect between what's the origin story? Where does this sentiment of a hired, paid force to keep, you know, quote unquote, law and order, and what that phrase means to different stratas of society? I think for the run-of-the-mill American, they hear law and order and they're thinking, oh, yeah, you know, just keeping things in order. But
I think of that TV show.
Yes.
And I think about losing an entire day because a marathon is on USA. That's what I think of.
That's a dangerous hole to sink into.
Yeah.
But, you know, the mystery is solved.
Dun-dun. I think about, as an actor, that show got canceled and I'll never get to be on it.
That's so shame. That's such a shame.
Anyways, that's what I think of, but continue. What other people think?
Other people think Law and Order, but, you know, when you're part of the elite class and elite economics, it's Law and Order is basically means keeping those disheveled people from the wrong part of town in their place. You know, the black people, at some point it was the Irish, the immigrants, the blacks, the Mexicans, whatever, the other, make sure they stay where they're at on their side of town, that they're not causing any trouble to disrupt my comfortable way of life, right?
Yeah.
And then on the flip side of that, law and order for lots of the communities of color means the exact opposite, means that my freedoms and my peace and everything is going to be disrupted in the name of, some rich white person's comfort, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really unfortunate. And although there have been reforms over the years and changes over the years, it's really interesting to see that the modern career policeman is essentially a new job, and it's not even 100 years old.
Kind of like Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. What? I'm not Indian.
It's just like Halloween. Halloween is just started like back in the 60s. Like our parents are the first ones that were trick or treating. Like our grandparents were not. Like Halloween started. We did an episode about. Listen, sometimes this podcast is like cramming for a final. I learn it in that week, and then it's gone. So I don't. You have to go into the archive to get all the nitty gritty of it.
I'm gonna have to go into the archive.
But it's just like Halloween. It's new. It's what I'm getting at is it's relatively new. We think about these things as like, oh, they've always been like, or even like the history of Christmas. Like Christmas, like just started like when Charles Dickens created our idea of like what Christmas is. There wasn't really any like practices around it, and he wanted one, and he wrote it and made it up.
Yeah, all these things are so new.
They're new.
Like, you think there's these old traditions.
They've always been around.
They're new. And I mean,
so societies have existed without police forces, is what you're saying.
Oh, yes, for a long time. And those police forces, once they started springing up in the early 1800s, were very closely tied to the economic elite.
Yeah.
Also, well, of course, in the early days of the country, the economic elite were tied very closely to the
slavery.
Political elite and slavery as well. But so you have this close tie. So it isn't until 1920s Prohibition era where there's some reforms made to have some legal separation between police precincts and the political and economic ties that they have. Mm. So, I mean, I'm talking 1920s before this happens, before there's some actual, like, all right, you know, this there's a lot of people getting away with a lot of alcohol here because alcohol makes a lot of money. And when the person that's making all the money owns the police, that's not really not getting some laws followed, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really until 100 years ago where we actually even have some reforms to separate the police as an entity a little more independent from their roots as, you know, basically the hired hands of business owners and slave owners.
Oh, my God.
And so this is a new job. And even, you know, after that, I mean, there was kind of a, you know, when you even talk about even having black people on the police force, there was maybe a fluttering of them during the Reconstruction era in the late 1800s. And then, you know, that all comes down. There's a gap and you go back into like basically the 1920s again before you even start seeing black officers. And it's really spotty. And I think there was an interesting speech that Killer Mike gave over, I think it was, you know, last week. Mm. But he talked about the 8 original black police officers in Atlanta and how those police officers had to change in the local YMCA because the white officers were not willing to even be in the same locker room and change with those black officers, right? Mm. And so there's this long-standing relationship between the police force and when a black person sees those words, protect and serve, you know, they mean something a lot different to that black boy in that urban neighborhood. And when you are, even if you have the best intention and you're a young man joining the police force as a young white man that is like, hey, I'm going to make a difference in my community and help. There's a whole culture that's perpetuated. And sometimes you don't even know, like, what are the origins of these phrases? What are the origins of some of these cultural norms that are a part of police culture?
Yeah.
And, you know, like how much of it is carrying over from those original origins,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
And so that's like, I thought that was just really interesting and just a way, again, to stop compartmentalizing history.
Nothing like, happened in a vacuum.
It does not.
They all have connections. Like, I'm for the first time, I'm seeing the connections. Like, I mean, like, everything has roots to it. And this is why, speaking of roots, this is why, like, you know, you can't just, I mean, I love Black History Month. I'm so glad that it exists, but it needs to permeate through just our history. Because black history is America's history. You can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
Slavery is an intrinsic part of American history. The reason why America became such a wealthy nation is because of capitalism, which then made it dependent upon cheap and free labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now you're seeing how the police forces were there to help protect this capitalist slave economy, and then how that just sort of permeates, you know, throughout its infrastructure and culture. It's there in its roots. So now when you see them, you know, standing by and protecting the Target, like, it all kind of comes full circle. It's like, oh, you back right where you started, aren't you, police?
Yeah. I mean, exactly. It doesn't stray
so
too far.
Perhaps actually the idea of protect and serve is a myth that we, or it's an aspiration that we have to the police. That they actually, that is a myth. That is a Santa Claus story that we have told ourselves about it. And it's a lie. And so it's more of an aspiration of what we believe that they should and could be. Maybe more so going back to like their Watchmen roots. That sounds pretty safe. Although the graphic novel and the TV show are fucked up. So, I mean, I kind of am a little triggered by that name. So I don't know if that's what we want to call them.
Yeah.
You know what? When I was a kid, me and my best friend, Bianca Chaperis, we had little peace signs. Because back in the 90s, like... Like, you know, like, peace was back. Like, everything that was in the 70s, Woodstock, it was all, you know, it was all back. You know, everyone had, like, flares and bell-bottoms again, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we called ourselves we had these little peace signs that we had, and we called ourselves the Peace Police.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we used to go around just trying to, we'd be like, Peace Police! Peace Police! You can't see, but I'm throwing my peace sign aggressively into BJ's face. And that's essentially what we how we spent, I won't say like all of our playground days. It was like one or two, and then we lost interest.
Yeah.
Like we were the...
It was the hotness for at least 48 hours.
Ooh, it was good. We were in a peace police. So maybe that's, you know, just a thought.
Yeah, but I mean, it goes back to that thought about like how deep this culture goes when it comes to a police force and how much effort it's going to take to be intentional about redefining it.
The effort, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it goes in hand with, you know, the campaign zero 10 points of like, and because it's a lot. Those 10 points are very detailed and it's a lot, but it's going to take all of that detailed work and like to be on it. Like it's no magic wand. Like there's no... You know, I think we also have like this magical thinking of like Obama will come and he'll save us, or like Bernie Sanders will come and he'll save us. It's like, no, we have to be active participants involved in this, involved in the reshaping of this country. It's going to take 323.2 million cc's of love to be injected into this country. That's the amount of people that live in this country.
So. Oh, I caught that.
Oh, oh, okay. He be knowing numbers.
It's late, but I feel pretty sharp.
But what I'm saying is that like it's gonna take everybody all hands on deck, and I don't say that lightly. But it's because it's we're talking, and it's interesting. I think if you reform the police structure, you really, I mean, everything else I think trickles away from that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it just has this powerful potential. Like, think of what the police department can be in this nation if it becomes a source of community help. It's almost like you have a built-in community task force to be thrown at any problem in your community, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to pay a bunch of strong, dedicated and patriotic men and women, and I'm going to throw them at whatever problem is happening at my city.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that should be...
We've got those rumors happening. Send a task force.
Yeah, Ms. Jenkins, you better tone it down because task force is coming.
Okay, yeah. Y'all want some cookies? We do, Ms. Jenkins. You know we love your cookies.
Yeah, but task force out. but yeah, like I think I want to close my corner out by kind of...
It literally makes me feel like... You know, there's something about when his knee was on his neck, and I feel like we've all felt that knee on our neck, metaphysically, you know? And I feel like you restructure the system, I literally feel like it's that metaphysical knee that's always present, always ever looming over every Black person in this country, and it gets it off of our neck because it's there and, like, can't breathe, you know?
Absolutely, you know, and transform that into a hand that's helping you up.
Oof.
Yeah.
Ugh, so revolutionary.
Yeah.
And what the root of that is love.
Yeah.
And so that's why, like, the love is the revolutionary idea here. And for some people, they can't comprehend it. What do you mean the police won't be killing people? What else are they going to be doing? Like, it's revolutionary to think that the intention behind them, everybody, behind that, what everybody does, but especially the police force's intention is... They are officers of peace and love, right? Like, it's a revolutionary idea, but that is the space where we need to get to.
Yeah, having compassion and empathy be the seed for how they operate in the community and you know, how those day-to-day operations work. And it sounds like a little bit of, you know, hippy-dippy, lovey-dovey, but, you know, I mean, love, you know, we got to stop looking at it that way. It needs to be looked at and... interpreted as a strong term that it is. Like, what love looks like is that, you know, dad that works overtime to make sure his family eats. And what love looks like is doing the hard thing, not going for the gun or the easy solution, but having a very hard conversation and getting to the bottom of whatever the issue is with the person that's angry and de-escalating. That is not easy. That is not an easy thing to do, but it is a compassionate thing to do, and it's an empathetic thing to do, because instead of trying to intimidate this person into a state of order or scare them into a state of compliance, I am going to accept and meet that person where they are and try to bring them from here, that is a dangerous place, down to here, where is a place of calm. And, you know, and it takes patience and empathy and compassion and a sense of really love and duty to be able to do that, because it is not an easy thing to do. It takes strength of character to do that, right?
And you're being true community leaders, because someone's got to put, I don't know, there's just something about, I think, like, again, if you take a, if the cops don't all, if not every cop has a gun, then there's something about, then I'm just a jackass if I'm just running around shooting everybody, right? Yeah. Like me, like I'm like, oh, they don't have guns. Well, let me get, but I'll get my billy club and then we have a club off, right? Yeah. Like, then I'm not a jackass. I just am meeting you where you are. So.
Yeah, there we go.
But it does, it's like leading, like taking that first step and initiating. Someone's got to put the weapon down first. And for the police to initiate that, again, it just is reforming and restructuring.
Mm-hmm. Just redefining what it means to be an officer of the law.
Yeah. Always good to have Bruce here on the podcast, or BJ, as I like to call him, because that's my cuzzo. That's how I know him. Man, what a week. I don't know about you all, but I am tired. I am just emotionally and mentally exhausted. I am sad. But I really enjoyed the conversation with BJ, and I hope you all did too. I want to take a moment to say a happy birthday to Breonna Taylor. She would have been 27 today. She was shot and killed, as we mentioned on the podcast, EMT worker shot and killed in her own home by the Louisville Police Department. And it just really breaks my heart. You know, we can't ever really complain about turning older, because whatever birthday you have, not everybody got to get where you are. It's such a gift every day that we have. And just a reminder that a lot of work to be done. There is a petition that I'll be linking in the show notes about, because the police officers involved, still, there's been no action taken against them. So, you know, charges still need to be filed. The family must be paid in damages for the wrongful death and negligence. I believe her boyfriend was also injured. The Kentucky governor, Andy Beshear, still needs to speak up on behalf of Breonna. They did a no-knock warrant that the police use. Just the whole entire thing is just, it's bullshit and heartbreaking. And we know that, for one, I was going to say, you know, we know if this was a white family, all hell would have broken loose, but it wouldn't have happened. It just wouldn't have happened. It just absolutely breaks my heart. So I know that this week was a lot. Of course it was a lot. If you didn't feel like it was a lot, you wouldn't be human. You're feeling so much because you are human and really being awaken to the realities that many of us have always felt. And it's a long road ahead. So make sure to take your breather and get back on that trail, because we can't let this fall by the wayside of Sandy Hook. We all thought that was going to be the moment, the thing that was going to change gun violence in this country. And I don't think we're any closer to curing our gun disease. And I mentioned that, you know, I did mention that we lost a lot of time 6 years ago after Ferguson, but I don't want to discredit all the work that has actually been done to bring awareness to these issues. That way we were able to really hit the ground running this go around, the strides that we made with Black Lives Matter, and all the movements and artists and activists and folks who just been out there doing the work. You know, you have My Brother's Keeper that's out there, and Ferguson just elected its first Black lady mayor, Ella Jones. Huge, long time coming. Progress is sometimes a very slow moving needle, but I'm hoping we can drive it so much faster right now with this momentum, with this energy, with this anger, with this pain. So wonderful work to everybody who's been in the trenches and doing the work, and folks who are here, welcome. And so we still need justice for Breonna Taylor. George Floyd is far, the situation is far from over. Yes, the one officer has been arrested, but the other three have not. And we don't know that there will actually be justice served in this case without us protesting. Protests do work. The work that y'all are doing, the noise that you're making, it does work. They're taking down racist statues all across this country in response to the protests, to the anger, to the hurt. Elected officials want to be elected again. And by protesting out there, it's just like voting. It's letting them know which side of history they need to be on. And again, as I said, I know this is a lot that's been going on, but this is nothing new. The only difference is some of us are being really aware of what's happening, truly, truly, truly. And we need to hold on to that awareness. We can't get comfortable. So welcome to the corner. You're officially a corner kid. Those who have been listening, thank you, our veteran corner kids. Thank you for listening, continuing to listen, and being a part of this community. I also just want to say a quick note to white folks and non-black people. I want to say thank you. You know, this week, I've seen a lot, and you're doing the work that needs to be done. You're and that bears acknowledgement. This is not easy work, but in this moment, you are rising to the occasion. And as I've said, I feel cautiously optimistic and hopeful with a twin to just wait and see. You know, I had been feeling scared and alone, but seeing the actions that you all have been taking on the streets, in through social media, the folks who have been reaching out to me personally, and I know to other folks in their lives, I have felt united and loved and supported. And most of all, I have felt seen. I know I said that before, but I have felt seen for the first time. And I've also been seeing, you know, hashtag not all Karens, you know, there are good Karens out there who have been using their Karen powers for good. I saw what has been dubbed as the Karen Bear stare. There was a line of white women who lined up in front of a bunch of black protesters and blocking that, like, oh, they lined up in front of a bunch of black protesters, essentially shielding them from the police who are in straight up riot attack gear. So talking about like using your white privilege for good, with great power comes great responsibility. So you got that power and got that privilege, and good to see you using it. Speak to those cops, manager. Yes, please. And K-pop fans have co-opted the hashtag White Lives Matter by posting K-pop to them and just destroying that hashtag and that feed. So, and that's just that plus so much more. But those are the fun ones I wanted to point out. So my hope is that this is going to be a lifetime and generational commitment to eradicating the disease of racism that has just plagued our country since its inception and beyond, since 1619 when the first slave ships landed. So we have to just keep going, keep doing the work. You will make mistakes. You will say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing. You'll be uncomfortable. You're going to feel pain. You're going to feel hurt. You're going to feel scared. You're going to step on toes. All the pains that one goes through when they're undergoing intense radiation treatment or surgery or birth or exorcism or what ever metaphor suits your, you know, fancy in this moment, in order to heal and rid oneself of the past plaguing that we have been enduring. We're finally, I think, fully confronting it head on. And it's going to get worse, and it's going to feel worse before it gets better. Absolutely. But that is part of the process. So we have to commit to this. We have to commit. You have to commit right now that you are going to work to end the systemic racism in this country towards black people and ensure that black lives do, in fact, matter. And for my black folks out there, I know you're tired. I know you're tired. I know you're exhausted because I fucking feel it too. So take care of yourself in this moment. And I also would say find that person in history who can be your guiding star and light, your inspiration, because they went through it too. For me, it's Harriet Tubman. Ooh, I mean, the work that she did, the amount of slaves that she freed and then became a spy for the Union Army. We have an episode about it in our archives. Check it out. And she didn't have Netflix. And I get it. Generational trauma is real. You're carrying all of that pain. And then now this current trauma and this current pain. But this too is our moment to make sure that the next generation of black folks don't have to endure this. It's going to stop here. I think everyone has to have a daily mantra or question that they ask themselves after they wake up? Well, first, I hope you say thank you, because every day is a gift and it's not a guarantee. And then after that, I hope you ask yourself, what will I do to help end systemic racism and anti-blackness today? Every day until it is gone, or until you draw your last breath, which will be 150 years from now, because I wish that for you. So again, thank you all. Keep going. Keep doing the work. Take a breath. Do a dance. Dig deep and keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. Keep going. So next week, we're going to be jumping into continuing on this kind of conversation. Actually, next week, we're going to jump into we talked about the history of the police. And now we're going to look at, you know, how do we reform the police? So we've mentioned Campaign Zero on the show today. Next week, we're going to dive even deeper into this, into the 10-point police reforming policy. That is, it's a beautiful thing. Also, want to just send a huge thank you to the Maximum Fun family in general. Behind the scenes, there's been a lot of great, wonderful support, and I want to throw that out there. Also to Justin, Travis, and Griffin of the My Brother, My Brother, and Me podcast. Really appreciate y'all dropping the Minority Corner feed into your podcast feed last week, and sharing the message of what we have here at Minority Corners. Really appreciate that solidarity.
Doing my home gym thing.
It's really dope. So be sure to also write a review for us on Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. Share this out on your social media feeds. Tag us. There's also the Minority Corner Kids Playground on Facebook. Some beautiful conversations. You can take these conversations even deeper and in a safe and beautiful place. And stay safe out there. Please stay safe out there. I love you all. Thank you so much for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.